Hey y'all, it's Stephanie from Root to Seed. This is the second part of a two-part series about insect pests and what we might be able to do about them. In today's episode, we will discuss common insects in our New England area, but first I want to share some news. First of all, happy birthday! Root to Seed turns one this weekend, and it has been quite a ride over the past year, but we couldn't have done it without our community. We love our customers and our community and our website visitors and everyone, so keep spreading the word so we can grow this community. We'll be starting our seedling sale this week, so keep your ears out for that. And this is the beginning of the busy season, so be sure to stay tuned to our pages for upcoming events and such. Okay, let's get to the bugs. Like invasive plants, there are also invasive insects. A large proportion of the common insect pests of lawns, landscapes, and gardens that we now monitor and manage originated from some other part of the world and could be considered invasive species. Let's use the common species white grub as an example. These include Japanese beetle, European chafer, Oriental beetle, and Asiatic garden beetle. Some species are still under quarantine to avoid moving them to other parts of the U.S. Winter moth is an example of invasive pests of trees and shrubs that are now common in parts of the Northeast. New invasive species of insects are still arriving. The Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, a part of the USDA, has the mission of intercepting potential pests as they arrive at seaports and airports, and also coordinates surveys for certain target pests in each state. Many people in the U.S., including us at Root to Seed, received packets of seeds from China. This APHIS department was also the department to handle the security of this issue. Many of the new pests in recent years have been wood-boring insects, such as the emerald ash borer, the Surex wood wasp, and the Asian longhorn beetle. These insects are believed to have arrived originally in wooden packing materials at seaports, but since their arrival, the most important pathway of spread in the U.S. has been from movement of firewood. So keep from spreading these serious pests and don't move firewood. Buy and burn your firewood locally. You can check the alerts for other pests to watch for through your local extension office or state environmental management sites. In Connecticut and Massachusetts, important pests to report include the emerald ash borer, a devastating pest of ash trees, and brown marmotted stink bug, which overwinters inside buildings but also damages many fruiting crops during the growing season. The distribution of different invasive insect species varies across the region, so check the pest alerts for your own state. And after this quick break, I will detail the Asian longhorn beetle and winter moth. Okay, so a very serious threat is the Asian longhorn beetle. This beetle has recently been causing havoc in various deciduous trees, including maple species in various parts of the U.S., including the Northeast. A major outbreak occurred in Worcester, Mass. In 2008 that resulted in the removal of 25,000 trees. Adult beetles are about 3/4 of an inch to 1.5 inches long, with a jet black body and scattered white spots on the back. They have long antennae that are about 1.5 to 2.5 times the body length, with distinctive black and white stripes on each segment. And their feet have a bluish sort of tinge to them. Currently, the only effective means to eliminate the Asian longhorn beetle is to remove infested trees and destroy them by chipping or burning. To prevent further spread of the insect, quarantines are established to avoid transporting infested trees and branches from the area. Early detection of infestations and rapid treatment response are crucial to successful eradication of the beetle. If you see the beetle, report it to your local extension office or environmental management office. In the community blog page at www.roottoseedonline.com, you can see what the pests mentioned in this podcast look like. Another more recent invader of the Northeast is the winter moth. The winter moth is abundant in eastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and just recently spread into Connecticut. The small light brown moths emerge and fly around in the evenings in late November to December. Early in the spring, the greenish, inchworm-like caterpillars form. These moths feed on developing buds and foliage of deciduous trees, in some years completely defoliating the tree entirely. In response to winter moth, first support the health of the affected trees, shrubs, and perennials with proper care. There are two choices here. You could either let nature take care of them or treat the trees and plants, many choosing to do this with an organic landscaper. You may also choose to treat small trees, shrubs, and perennials themselves. A defoliated tree may be able to put out a second flush of leaves, but may need some extra watering to handle that kind of stress. Nature's tools for pest control include harsh weather, wind, natural predators, birds, diseases, and the tree's own defenses. A parastoid tachinid fly has been established after successfully and permanently ridding Nova Scotia and the Pacific Northwest of this moth. If the flies are not available in your area, if you have an individual specimen tree you're concerned about, there are several organic options available to professional landscapers. We talked about BT in section one of this podcast, and there are a variety of BTs. One is called BTK that specifically targets butterfly and moth caterpillars. Female winter moths are wingless and can be hand-picked or trapped as they climb trees to lay their eggs in November and December. Many have found the use of double-sided tape about a third of a way up the tree trunk will catch the eggs or cause the females to get stuck. The tape is changed after wet weather. I'll be back in a few seconds to discuss grubs. Sometimes, taking in new information and then attempting to facilitate what you learned can be daunting. Well, we're here to help you. Did you know Root to Seed offers consultation? This can be done on site if you're local, or it could be done virtually. We can help with planning, problem solving, designing, insect or disease issues, or pretty much any other questions you have. If you're interested, you can contact us through the website or email at www.roottoseedonline.com if you'd like additional information. We hope to hear from you. Okay, let's move on to the nemesis of those who love their lawns and turf, the white grub. This grub is pale, crescent-shaped larval stage of the sacrub beetle. They have a dark head, six small legs near the head, pale or white body, and a darker, hairy area at the back end of their abdomen. They pass through three larval stages in the soil where they eat the roots of a variety of grasses and sometimes other plants. There are 11 different species of white grub in the Northeast, and many were named in the beginning of this episode. Most lawns and turfs have some grubs as part of their working ecosystem, and that's perfectly normal and harmless. Too many grubs, however, and you'll begin to see problems with your lawn. Symptoms of grub damage in a lawn are brown patches in the fall and spring where the grass is dead and easily comes up when pulled because the roots have been eaten. If you find this to be the case, you can dig down a few inches around the bare area to see if there are any active grubs. You'll see them right away. Another clear clue is wildlife seemingly eating your lawn in the spring. Moles, a variety of birds, skunk, raccoons, and possums will eat the grubs right from your lawn. The good news is many of the cultural practices for maintaining your organic lawn also, coincidentally, discourage white grubs. Soil moisture and timing is a major factor in determining grub density in any given year. All white grubs need moist soil for their eggs to hatch, and young grubs are very susceptible to overdrying. So watering during adult beetle activity in early summer attracts egg-laying females. Different species have slightly different life cycles, but in general, eggs are laid in June or July. So stick to the watering and mowing schedules defined in our to lawn or not to lawn episode, and you should be okay. White grubs are very fond of turf grasses, so having a diversity of plants in your lawn not only improves your ecosystem, but also discourages damaging grub outbreaks. Having a wide diversity of species in your lawn, including clover, yarrow, mosses, sedges, fescues, and wildflowers, goes a long way toward preventing grub damage. There are also a lot of natural predators that are on your team. Assuming your lawn is alive and healthy, ground beetles, rove beetles, and even ants are effective predators of grub eggs. There are parasitic wasps and flies that attack older grubs and adult beetles. In addition, there are naturally occurring organisms such as plastic nematodes, fungi, bacteria, and protozoa that can kill or weaken grubs. We tend to use parasitic nematodes. We purchase them online and we release them before the 4th of July, and it takes about 3 dry days for the nematodes to kill the grubs. I'll be back in a few seconds to talk about ticks and mosquitoes. The problem with ticks is not the tick itself, but the diseases it carries. Deer ticks in our area and their accompanying diseases have to use the white-tailed deer and white-footed mice to complete their life cycles. So wooded areas and the transition between woodland and open meadows usually have the highest numbers of deer ticks. Very few of this kind of tick are found in lawns and meadows, and these ticks are found nearly mostly within 3 yards of woodlands, plantings, or stone walls. Ticks avoid dry areas and do not jump, fly, or drop. They attach themselves to clothing by brushing against grass, twigs, and fallen leaves. Ticks can survive through the washing machine, so be sure any clothes are also dried in the dryer. The tick can't survive this. There are some steps you can take to keep yourself safer. Be sure to do tick checks for yourself, your family, your pets, anytime you may have been exposed. Adopt low water landscaping techniques. Use gravel pathways and create 3 feet or wider wood chip mulch or gravel border between lawn and woodlot or areas where there's low ground cover. Keep grass mowed near woods and stone walls, and in these areas you can mow lower at about 2 inches to discourage ticks. Remove leaf litter, brush, and weeds at the edge of the lawn around stone walls and wood piles. Discourage rodent activity, clean up and seal stone walls and small openings around your home. Move firewood piles and bird feeders away from your home. Use plantings that do not attract deer or exclude deer through various types of fencing. Move children's swing sets and sandboxes away from the woodland and shrubs into drier, sunnier areas. Trim tree branches and shrubs around the lawn edge and let in more sunlight. And widen woodland trails. Now, arguably, the worst part of summer is mosquitoes. They're annoying, and in our area can carry West Nile virus and equine encephalitis, and are responsible for transmitting heartworm to dogs. We'll never eradicate mosquitoes, but of course, many have tried. There are more than 50 species of mosquito in the Northeast alone, and each one has its own specific feeding, breeding, and biting behavior. We can't eliminate them, but there are some very effective techniques for keeping them away from us. Mosquitoes are most easily controlled by removing their breeding sites. Your first and best strategy is to rid your property of areas of standing water where mosquitoes can breed. The next most effective method is larval control. If you have unavoidable standing water, such as a pond or wetland on your property, you can use a larvicide called BTI, which is very effective and specific to mosquitoes and gnats. They're often sold as donut-shaped cakes that are tossed into standing water and provide about 30 days of larvaciding. Once they reach adult stage, the best strategies are repellents, screens, long-sleeve clothing, and avoidance. There's no scientific evidence about what I'm about to tell you, but it's just my personal method of trying to reduce mosquitoes in my area. So landscape garlic repellents. There are a few in the organic section of any hardware or garden store. It can be sprayed on and around areas where you want to decrease mosquito presence. It can be sprayed on plants, lawns, decking, etc. The garlic smell goes away in about a day and it lasts about 3 weeks. Give it a try. I find it works pretty well. one quick break before my final thoughts. I do hope you've gained some useful information from this episode. Do check out the community blog for some visual resources. Next week, we will discuss permaculture. Be sure to stay in touch, sign up for the newsletter, like us on social media, and if you're enjoying the podcast, subscribe and leave a review. It really does help us bring you great content. Until next time, be kind to the planet, be kind to each other, and join our community.